Lost and Sound is proudly sponsored by Audio Technica. Audio Technica are a global but still family-run company that make headphones, turntables, cartridges, microphones, studio-quality yet affordable products, because they believe that high-quality audio should be accessible to all. And I'm speaking to you right now wearing their M50X headphones. They're for the studio, they're for every day. I speak to all my guests wearing these headphones. I wear them on the move because that's what I'm like. But however you like to listen, head on over to audiotechnica.com to check out all of their range of stuff. How are you doing? How's it going? Hope you're good. And welcome to Lost and Sound. I'm Paul Hamford. I'm your host. I'm a writer and author based in Berlin, where I'm not actually speaking to you right now from, but more on that in a minute. If you're new to the show, this is the show where each episode I have conversations with the musical innovators, the outsiders, the mavericks, the artists that do their own unique thing. And we talk about life and the things that inspire us to make the things that we make. Previous guests have included Peaches, Suzanne Ciani, Jim O'Rourke, Chili Gonzalez, Letitia Sadier, Ghost Poet, Cozy Funny Tutti, Nightmares on Wax, Baxter Jury, and Thurston Moore. And today, you're going to hear a live audience conversation I had with Danger Mammy from Fembass Mafia. My book, Coming to Berlin, is available now on Velocity Press or in speciality bookshops. And yes, so here we are. If you can hear something a little bit different in the background, that's because I am in a different place. This is a little bit of a different episode from usual. I am sat on a rooftop in Athens, Greece, and I've been here for a few days with my girlfriend and absorbing in different elements of this city. And it's bloody lovely. It's a city full of cats. Everywhere I go, there's cats, different cats. It seems to be the thing that cats just like live wild. I don't know. I feel like an interloper, but it's just an observation. Wherever you walk, there's just cats everywhere. It feels like cats have got their own special thing here. I think I need to do a bit of research, maybe write the sequel to Coming to Berlin about cats in Athens. But anyway, this is a little bit of a different episode from usual because this was recorded live in front of an audience. And this happened about a little bit over a month ago in the Selina Hotel in Berlin Mitte, where Daniel and Josh from the Berlin Podfest organization called Berlin Podfest invited me to do a live episode. This has never happened before. This is the first time this has happened. And it is quite a different kind of context to go into. It's definitely a different feeling. And I think you'll pick up on that when you listen. But I invited in one of my favorite Berlin DJs at the moment, Danger Mammy, to have a chat with me. She's a DJ that's growing within the Berlin and European bass and techno scene quite rapidly in the last few years. She's one of these people like me, I guess, that sort of during the pandemic just got to work, just got busy, just started doing stuff. Not only as a DJ herself, but with the mentoring program, Fembass Mafia, which is something that she started out of lockdown and that whole strange thing we went through a few years ago. It's a DJ mentoring program for femme, trans and non-binary people with a focus on bass music and the creation of a safer learning space. So yes, it's an unusual conversation in terms of the context. We're on a stage. You can hear a baby crying in the background at some parts. The venue was just an open hotel. I really love chatting with Danger Mammy. It's, you know, Fuck the Patriarchy episode. If you've got a problem with that, if you've got a problem with kind of like woke stuff, whatever you want, if you want to call stuff like woke and have a problem with it, just fuck off anyway. This probably isn't the podcast for you. Otherwise, I reckon you'll have a good time listening. I had certainly had a good time chatting with her. And this is what happened when I met Danger Mammy from Fembase Mafia at the Selina Hotel in Berlin for Lost and Sound.
Hey, how are you all doing? Hello and welcome to Lost and Sound. We're in the Selina Hotel in Berlin in Mitte. It's a Saturday afternoon. It's pissing it down outside. And this is the first ever live Lost and Sound. If you're new to what this is about, thanks for being here. If you're just here randomly, I hope this next hour is enjoyable for you. And if you're listening back to the stream, I hope you kind of get a little bit of a rainy, but in a nice way, Mitte atmosphere in the go. And today, live with me at the Selina Hotel, one of the most exciting DJs and creative founders in Berlin and Europe at the moment. She's called Lilia. You probably know her as Danger Mammy. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very, very, very welcome. Thanks for coming down on this day. It's quite interesting, actually, because it's here on a Saturday afternoon and you DJ most weekends. Is this sort of like a kind of a bit of a break from your routine to sort of be out and about in the day in a non-club context?
It would depend. Usually I'm stuck in the Deutsche Bahn, traveling to another city. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of a regular weekend where I try to have something during the day to keep me grounded. Like, I DJed last night, woke up kind of early, had a breakfast, came here, and now we're leaving like normal people.
Amazing. So, where were you playing last night?
At Paloma.
A Paloma.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the windows there.
Yeah, it was a very like intimate, funny party. Like,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Were you playing in the part where you have the windows or upstairs?
Upstairs.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's nice. I remember the last time I went to Paloma was the last time I got turned away from the big house, actually.
Ah. Yeah. Yeah. Fuck that.
Yeah. And you sort of mentioning about that, but so about kind of keeping a routine and things like that. How important, because you know, you DJ pretty much most weekends. And I think, I mean, even if I party more than once a month, I feel it really badly and it takes me a long time to recover. And I'm not suggesting that stimulants or anything like that are involved in this process for you, but just the sheer thing of being up and communicating with people in such an intense way for hours through the night, how is your sort of well-being balanced around that? How do you, because you do stuff in the week as well, you know, I should say you're a booker at RSO and you run this organization we're going to be talking about, Fembase Mafia. How do you keep the balance because of that?
It's really being like greedy with my time. Mm. So during the week I try to have at least, you know, two nights where I'm off, where I don't see anyone, where I just, you know, can like lock the door and throw the key away and do my own thing. And over the weekends, like a typical weekend, I would like prepare the field, you know. So on Friday, I do a deep cleaning in my house. Mm. So I know that when I come back home, it will be like calm and like my safe spot and everything. But also during DJ gigs, I tend to not drink like crazy, or sometimes I would mostly DJ sober, because otherwise you can't keep up. And Monday I work, so you have to find some sort of compromise in it as well. Yeah.
And that's a really good way to do it. And how, you know, that thing of having no surprises when you get back home as well, of having a really clean house to get back to.
Yeah, it's so nice. You know, it's like when you wake up and your kitchen is like spotless.
Yeah. Nice one. Well done, me.
Exactly.
And you kind of mentioned about like quite often DJing and staying sober when you DJ as well. And I think one of the sort of biggest highs that comes, that when I speak with artists that DJ comes, is that sort of sense of flow state you get into when you play, when you realize you're sort of at one with everyone dancing and everyone in the room. And I was wondering if you could describe that kind of feeling for you and what it's like when you get there and how you get there.
I would describe it as overwhelming, but also really nice. It's a really like nice feeling to know that people get you and that you can kind of interact with them and give them the unexpected and see them vibing with it is very gratifying. Mm. In the sense of like, okay, so they probably didn't expect this kind of music to be played, and they're gonna go home maybe and think about the music and be like, oh, that was sick, and this was different, and I had never heard this before, or maybe I heard it before but I wasn't interested, and you know, so that's kind of the
sort of backwards and forwards. And how do you feel that you're influenced as well by the people around you when you're playing?
I mean, sometimes really positively, as in, you know, smiles and like love notes and things like that. Sometimes really negatively. I mean, men coming in the booth, touching the decks, that kind of stuff. It happens on the regular, or just, you know, like getting drunk people coming up to you and be like, hey, can you play like fucking edit of Britney Spears and or things like that, and it's like constant requests, and it's at first it was really like, oh no, I don't know how to deal with this, and now I'm kind of like, yeah I'll play it later, don't worry, like it's coming. And then they're like waiting and they're like happy, and then they leave, you know, they leave you alone. So that's
I mean, I want to talk to you a lot more about, we're going to go into this in a little bit, about some of the subjects you're talking about there, but in the most lighthearted way, what you're saying about requests and stuff, because I used to DJ in London before I moved here, and I stopped DJing pretty much when I got to Berlin, but I'm quite shocked to know that people make requests in Berlin.
I mean, Berlin, but anywhere, really.
Yeah. That is, yeah, definitely. If you're listening to this and you make requests, you should be ashamed of yourself, basically.
Or if you tell the DJ what to play, that's even worse.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's a place for that, and it's called The Matrix. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Tell your mates to not do it.
Don't. And also going back to Stux, in fact, you know, your DJ stories happened quite recently in the bigger scheme of your life, you know. I wanted to kind of go back to the start and ask how music actually came into your life, you know. Was there like an epiphany moment?
I would like to thank my mom and my dad. And, you know, but, I mean, pretty much like it's always been around me, as in, my dad is a bassist, not professionally, but kind of, you know, in his free time in a band and that sort of thing. So it's always been there, you know, him going to rehearsal with his band and things like that. And my mom came out of the USSR and like basically discovered R&B and shared that love with me. So at home it was kind of like 50 Cent and Rolling Stones from my dad's side of things. So it was kind of like a good mixture of genres. And, you know, like on Sunday, my dad would like blast records like at 10 a.m. to wake us up. And it would be like Zouk and Calypso and punk and rock and whatever and whatnot. So yeah, it's always been super present in my life.
Amazing. Where was this? Because you've lived in different cities as well, haven't you?
So I think this would be like, it started in the Netherlands. I'm half Dutch, half Russian. And then in France, mostly, where I spent a big chunk of my life as well.
It's really nice when I have that kind of, you must have, do you have like moments that you can kind of grasp now where you remember? Because I have little fragments of memories. Like you really, I love the way you describe your parents playing music, and where like, I'll just suddenly, if I hear Neil Diamond, it reminds me of my mum, you know, and just, it would be like a car journey with my mum somewhere or something like that. Are there any sort of like really like acute moments that you sort of, do you just go, yes, like maybe a song or something that you go, yes, that is definitely my mum when I was five?
My mom's ringtone was like PIMP. I don't know what you heard about me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that's like a defining moment of like.
Is that 50 Cent?
I think so, yeah. Mariah and 50 Cent.
Oh, amazing.
I think so.
I don't know what you heard about me.
No. That's about it.
What was the sort of first sort of thing that you felt that was your own, that you found for yourself, that was that thing away from this amazing influence from your parents?
I guess then you slowly start shifting to like indie rock, indie music, Arctic Monkeys, the XX and that kind of era. And then by that time I was a teenager. So then you start developing your own taste and be rebellious. And then this really quickly moved to electronic music with Ed Banger's records. Which
you were
was
in France,
big in France
at the time.
Exactly. Right. So all the Busy Peas and the Breakbots and Uffy, like I think those were my first electronic music, you know, influences. So that's kind of where it started. And from there, I guess it evolved over time, then became a techno head. With moving to Berlin as well, I was really obsessed and I wanted to work in music and made it happen. And so it's kind of flowed. And then at some point, I don't know, influences happened, new friends happened, a love for the UK and for all its all of its music originating from around there and for people who live there. yeah, so then it slowly shifted to more bass music and then kind of wanting to be a bit different in this very monotonous Berlin sound.
Right, yeah, and that's a big thing that Fembass Mafia are doing collectively and within the individual people as well, isn't it? Which I wanted to ask you about as well, but just a little bit more on this, because I love what you're saying about this this kind of line of discovering things for yourself, and I can kind of picture the time frame you mean. Were you living in Paris at the time?
In south of France, that's where I think it was the first time I saw like Nina Kravitz, you know, like she was playing in this big club in Cannes, south of France, and it was like a big thing and everyone knew her. And it was the only night per month where it would be electronic music. And then on the other nights it would be, I don't know, like Akon and LMFAO and all these guys performing like hip hop in the club, you know, like bottle service. This kind of vibe.
Right, yeah, VIP rooms. And,
yeah, VIP room was a big thing, but then moved to Paris eventually, and there was hanging out at Social Club a lot, faking my ID with nail polish, and then would, try to see the Ed Bangers live in the club.
That's amazing. I think a lot of people as well, because you sort of mentioned about being a bit of an indie kid for a while, I think a lot of people that are, I think are in, you know, making electronic music now or DJing now, within sort of our age brackets, had a sort of, it sort of came through a period of indie in the mid-noughties, you know, mid to late noughties, really, you know, and then there's that move you mentioned, like Ed Banger as well, and suddenly it's like, which Ed Banger is kind of like, it's dance music that indie people can understand, same as like LCD Sound System or something like that, but then once you go there, it's sort of, you sort of, I felt myself as a little bit to the indie, bye-bye.
Tend to shift away from it, but it's still part of such a big culture. It was also, you know, with Skins and Misfits and all these TV shows that went with that same era. And then like everyone reading Charles Bukowski at some point because it was like that vibe.
Yeah,
you know,
it's grimy.
The indie people would like read Charles and Burrow and all those guys and like
I think there's a kind of a beautiful rite of passage to that as well. It's something that, you know, I think a lot of people, I definitely went through that. I don't know if it's, do you think it's a guy thing? Do you think it's like slightly more of a masculine thing to sort of do the whole kind of beat poet smoking rollies or?
Maybe it is, yeah, in a way.
Because I definitely think I did it, but I'm not saying that I only do guy things, but.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just growing up with lots of guys around me, I guess, you know, like the main music figures kind of influence you into doing the same.
Yeah, and I guess if the predominance of music figures are male, then we're sort of like, the influences around have like a kind of a masculine voice until that changes, until there are more like non-masculine voices with influence, I guess.
Yeah. Is that a question?
I don't know. Maybe, or just a line of words. But so you moved to Berlin, and that was in 2015. Sorry,
15.
I missed the 10.
No, I think I was like 10 years old.
Right. Yeah. What happened? How did you? How did you get here? I don't mean like technically, you know, like on the EasyJet or something, but...
It was EasyJet.
Right.
It was a bit of like kind of an accident. I don't know. Like I went on vacation here for 2 weeks with a friend of mine and really loved it, obviously. I was like, oh, amazing. Went to Tresor, got rejected 10 times from the big house. And
10 times?
Approximately, right, you know, yeah, like we would try like every few hours and then...
With like a moustache and then a top hat. And then, like
we would,
you know,
literally go home, change outfits, try again. And they would be like, nah, just get out, just leave. Like, okay. But later on, I understood why. I don't think we were ready for it. We were like 18, 19, so... Mm. I think it's a bit like too early, or maybe we weren't there yet. So I understand it. But yeah, and then after that vacation, I had to look for an internship with my studies, and I really wanted to get the fuck out of Paris because it's a very like kind of narrow-minded city in a way. It's really hard to find community there and or friends, you know, like that share necessarily the same stuff as you, like interests as you. So it was a bit of a dark rite of passage where
dark
you needed
rite
to,
of passage.
Where you needed
to
leave, you know, you just like need to move to another country. And that's what I did.
Did you know anyone here when you first moved?
No.
Why?
So yeah, no, I got dropped off at Paris airport, cried like a baby at the gates, and then said bye with like my suitcase that was as high as me. And and then started an internship in at the Museum of Colors, so which is a project which closed unfortunately because of, you know, lack of funding and things like that. And then made my way through and found other internships in music. So that's how it started.
That's amazing. And so there was like a 5-year period or approximately between you arriving in Berlin and discovering various things, doing internships. And you were sort of mentioning about there kind of realizing kind of certain imbalances in Berlin nightlife and in general nightlife and club culture. And then in 2020, suddenly this kind of weird thing happens that already feels like a bit of a strange dream, you know, but, and then of course the pandemic. And then this was a time where you started to DJ and Was it the same time that you started to have the idea for Fembase Collective, or was this something that had been brewing up for a while in your mind?
I've always wanted to DJ for sure. Just never knew like who to ask, how to start. You know, it was all very confusing. And then I just landed my first job in more corporate side of things for a digital music platform. But and there started to kind of, you know, see, and I was doing artist relations, so I was taking care of all the male DJs around, and to find, you know, like femme DJs was really like a hassle, a struggle. There weren't so many, or they wouldn't be, you know, up for doing any content because they were shy and insecure and, you know, or not there yet. And so there you start understanding that there's really like a lack of, there's a big gender imbalance already there. So then I was like, okay, Who should I ask, you know? Who should I look up to? Who can I ask that I trust and who will support me in this? Because at that point, you just want to learn something. But learning of, like, a man or, you know, like, someone that you don't necessarily, like, trust or that you don't feel comfortable with, it was a bit of a process. So,
No, that's really great. I mean, that you know, so basically this leads to Fembase Mafia, you know, and the foundation of it. And what was the first sort of point where you... Actually, it probably helps if I sort of ask you to sort of define in what you feel right now it represents for you, Fembase Mafia. What is it about?
I guess really trying to provide tools and empowerment for people to be able to step in and, you know, start their career and feel like they can do it and that they have, you know, people who have their back in doing this. And then as a result, changing, you know, all of the disparities in lineups and festivals and maybe behind the scenes as well. So all the people who work in clubs and booking agencies and PR and publicism and whatnot. So, yeah, I feel like maybe it contributes to that a little bit, as well as diversifying, of course, the sound of Berlin, which is pretty traditional in terms of, music genres. And
do you feel there's a link between the traditionalness of the sound and the male dominance that you've encountered that is hopefully changing, or hopefully organizations like what you're doing are changing? You know, is there sort of a connection between the sort of rigidity of I don't know, I guess what we're saying, the sound, the minimal sound?
I don't think so, because it's everywhere, you know, like it's in every genre. You even see it in, you know, like the mainstream in the pop and the R&B artists, you know, who win Grammys and stuff. There's still a big disparity. There's many men winning all those prizes, and I guess it's the same in our little community bubbles, you know, or in any kind of, like bass music is notorious for not having so many women on the front. So I guess, it's just, you know, patriarchy.
And I want to ask you more about the patriarchy and go deeper into that, but I wanted to sort of, talk a little bit about what Fembase Mafia are actually doing, what they've set out. Because I see your presence a lot, you know, I love it. You know, there's always like, that you know, you have people on who are radio, there's Refuge, you know, there's these kind of like all-night takeovers in places. But I was wondering if you could kind of summarize like some of these highs that you feel like you've all achieved, you know.
I mean, to maybe summarize it, it's a DJ mentoring program for femme, trans and non-binary people. And so we have a 6-month program where Berlin-based DJs, Luzi, DJ Fokov, Miss J, JPEG Love, Monaby, and Marie Midori, and myself. So we teach on a bi-weekly basis and to a group of 6 people who applied to the mentorship beforehand. And we follow them for 6 months and provide them, courses about DJing, but also mental health and how to navigate the industry and social media, how to create your press kit, that kind of stuff. So it's more of a multifaceted program where at the end of it, they get to graduate. So they get like, we try to organize a club gig where, you know, all of them play, and it's really like wholesome vibes where everyone, you know, gets to perform for the first time in front of a crowd. And it's like, another rite of passage. I feel like we said that word quite a few times today.
Rite of message, There must have been so many beautiful moments, like seeing the transformation in various different ways of the DJs on the program. Are there any sort of highlights that stick out in your mind? I mean, I imagine it must be cruel to pick one or two, but, you know, is there anything that kind of comes into your mind of sort of just seeing people transform or feel more like they're stepping into the actual selves that maybe they might have felt that they've been denied previously?
Yeah, I mean, there are quite a few very amazing moments, but I used to cry in the corners, like at the workshops, because I was like, oh my God, this is actually happening. Like, they're doing their first transitions. This is so cute. And, you know, like, you get like this maternal instincts, like, oh, like my babies are growing. And, but no, like, there are a few like success stories. One of them moved to Japan in Tokyo, and she's thriving. She's gigging every weekend and really, like, you know, implemented herself in the scene there, where they don't really, like, it didn't seem like they really had space for this kind of music. So more like jungle and drum and bass and more UK-based kind of music. So I think, I think that's a really, like, cool thing to see evolve.
What's her name? Give a shout.
LMX1B.
Okay, excellent.
And another one, Abiba, she basically quit her job to pursue DJing full time. So it's now her actual profession. So I'm also really, you know, stoked to see that people take it to the next level and really like use what they learned and represent, you know, the crew as well.
The proof is out there then.
proof is out there.
Yeah. So, and you know, you mentioned about patriarchy, and I really want to dive into this, if that's okay with you.
Let's go.
You know, because you've had like these years of experience working for various facets of the music industry, and you know, in clubs, and you've seen this, and it's kind of various different manifestations of how the patriarchy can push aside other perspectives and other viewpoints and other people's opportunities. And I was wondering if you could kind of, I know it's a really hard, quite big subject to talk about or pin down in a way, but like, how does this manifest? How do cis men shut people out of the pit? I don't mean me, like me, you're talking about me. No, but how do people get shut out by this?
I guess there's just a lot of gatekeeping, you know, like for example, I don't know, behind the scenes, let's say in a team of bookers in a club, if one of them leaves for X reason, the first person they would, you know, suggest to join the team would probably be a man.
Like their mate Dave. They'll go and get their mate Dave. He's a great sound. I know a great sound engineer.
Exactly.
Mate Dave, rather than thinking, maybe, do you know someone else? Do you know maybe a balance could be good here? You know?
Right. I mean, I feel like, especially in my team, you know, they're really like, they really tried. They're really trying to get like a few different influences, you know, in the team, which is really good. I feel in general in the scene, this has been an ongoing process of just gatekeeping in a way.
So I think it was actually because I actually taught a lesson on our gender imbalance in technology and music a few weeks ago, which was quite strange. And I sort of felt like, initially, I felt uncomfortable because although I try my hardest to be an ally, like it's something I do tune into every day, and like because I think if you don't tune into it every day, you kind of just like getting a badge saying I'm woke, I've done my bit, and then just get lazy again, you know, because it's a continual process. But I was also thinking, is it really my place as a sort of someone who probably more identifies as cis in the most broadest kind of scope out to be speaking to a class that's like, where it's probably about 60% women about this. But then I kind of, my thing was like, okay, well, if it's always down to women to talk about feminism, then you know, it's just women kind of constantly having to explain to men where surely men should be explaining to each other how they could be better.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that you say that, because recently I had like this panel chat. I think it was for International Women's Day, 8th of March. So everything is obviously centered about women speaking up. And I find it really redundant that whenever there's an issue that needs to be addressed in the scene, like we organize all those panels, chats and whatever, and it's always, you know, like they always ask the marginalized person like to speak up and to say, you know, what we should do, what they should do. And
which is tokenism, isn't it?
It can be. I guess there's also lots of, you know, good will that's comes from it, you know, it's like really trying. But yeah, no, I think there's a lot of common sense to it as well, and I don't think a cis man like can be or should be like completely lost in terms of like what to do to support women, you know.
Right.
I'm
really following what you're saying. Yeah, it's I don't know any answers to it, but I think I definitely try to listen, really. And so I think being in this class was really interesting, because it was like I had to teach something that, where I was, you know, I had to kind of preface that I'm really sorry if I'm going to start mansplaining about this. Just shout at me if I do. But it brought up a lot of questions, like that I feel that, you know, you've talked about already so far, in terms of when we got to the feedback and the women in the class were sort of talking about their experiences in like even as students within the industry, about like sort of feeling that maybe certain like kind of like the engineer end of things particularly felt like very off limits, you know, just through sort of the male dominance of it and stuff, and felt maybe intimidated to sort of ask for changes, even if like they're an artist and they were in a studio, like making changes to how their voice sounds or something like that, you know. And yeah,
Yeah, I guess you know, taking space is a concept that's really unknown to most of us because we've just been socialized like that to kind of be like, oh no, no worries, it's all good. I don't want you to go out of your way, but I feel like this should, you know, become a blurred border where you just say what you want and get it or ask at least and not feel bad about it and not feel guilty. But yeah, I guess also men on the other hand should also know, you know, it's like, what do you do then for people to feel safe
right
with you or to make them, you know, feel included and supported and seen and heard and you know, do you treat people really equally, like, do
yeah. Do you have you noticed any changes? Have you noticed, like, I mean, say for example, since I guess we're about a year and a half back into post-pandemicness, aren't we? I don't know. I've lost track of time, really. But do things feel different now, or maybe better or worse? Or
I think better. I mean, there's definitely hope. Within our communities, of course, sometimes when you step out of them, step out of your safer spot, your safe zone, then you notice that things are still a bit off, especially when you're like in other cities and other countries and see like how the clubs work there or how the bookers work there and you know, the feedback you get, the crowd even, you know, there's a lot of things that you can kind of perceive as really unsafe or maybe like not as aware compared to Berlin, where I feel in most places like people are kind of educated about, you know, where they are, what kind of party they go to, what you should and should not do to people that you don't know. I feel like this is not, you know, it's not a handbook.
It's not a given thing elsewhere, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you feel like, I mean, because, you know, traditionally, the Club Commission has had like such a big role in kind of globally sort of setting agendas for sort of things. It's like Berlin being a club-based city, you know, saying we do it like this here. Do you feel that the Club Commission is an organization that listens to changes, like sort of in a non-patriarchal way?
Yeah, I mean, their team is very diverse from the start, so I guess that helps.
That's great,
And they do have working groups where they focus on specific topics like mentoring or gender balance and lineups or, you know, sustainable clubbing and those kind of things. So they have a lot of, like, different poles where they do working groups and reach out to other people outside of the Club Commission to work on that and kind of try and see how to spread awareness on certain topics. So I feel like they do things.
That's good. So they're being pretty supportive and they're sort of carrying these ideas.
Definitely. Also with when it comes to like help for like funding and things like that, which is really crucial for collectives and crews like mine, they are also of a big help and also provide, you know, there's also this Tag der Clubkultur prize where I was a jury last year and it was really like amazing to see the number of applicants and the number of very diverse crews and things like that in Berlin who then, you know, feel addressed and safe to apply to some funding like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you sort of mentioned like this, also since post-pandemic as well, we're talking about like, you know, your crew and other related crews are sort of having quite a big influence on nightlife at the moment in terms of like changing the dominance of the sound somewhat and opening the sound up. And I've noticed, you know, sort of going to smaller parties as well, you know, even like maybe a lessening of the traditional sound, or maybe it's sort of the traditional sound game. That's all right. I like a good glass knock and stuff. It's part of the live experience. Yeah, live triple album.
For God's gravity.
Yeah. Or even like sort of elements of like bass sound mixing with the more traditional sound as well. Where do you feel like the most exciting parts of club culture are coming from at the moment? And you can be as like totally subjective as you like here, you know.
The most exciting, I don't know. I would say it usually comes from, you know, the smaller communities who have a sound that's underrepresented from the start. I mean, it really depends what you're looking for when you go clubbing, though. Is it for the love of music, or do you just want to like shake it off and think of something else, and you don't give a fuck about what's played in the club?
I mean, I definitely think if we're having a conversation about clubbing and music, they go hand in hand, you know. But I do, you know, I don't want to discredit, rule out the fact that sometimes you just want to let go of stuff and, you know, shake it off.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift. Yeah.
I mean, usually, I guess, like when you speak to the regular club goer, it's not always, you know, the big like music aficionado who really like looks at the lineup and things like that. Maybe it's more in our spheres where we really think of like who's playing, what kind of music is there, and things like that. But yeah, for me, it would come from smaller crews who just smaller parties, and also mostly abroad, outside of Berlin.
What do you mean by that? What kind of places?
In the Netherlands, there's quite a few like really interesting crews. As in, like, I'm Feminine or even Bok Bok label, you know, like, kind of defying the traditional sound and landscape of the scene. Also the UK, but I guess that's where I'm most attached to music-wise. So
this is the love of bass culture coming from the UK.
Nothing beats.
You like say that with like kind of like resigned. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
I mean, if I could live there, I would, but I don't think that would be an option. As in, it's way too big.
Right.
It's way more chill here, so I guess I do prefer like calling Berlin my base.
And you can kind of just import sonically the things you like about the UK.
I guess
or
so.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you become an underground community. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I think like there's music cultures have always had a tradition of importing in certain aspects of things into unfamiliar settings, and it sort of changes it as well.
And exchange and inviting people over and have this kind of. Yeah, definitely. Musical sharing or understand like the same understanding just in another space.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's usually not the thing, and this leads to very like intimate settings, like parties where people understand where they are and why they're here and why the DJs play the music they are playing. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Would you, if you could take Fembase Collective to Fembase Mafia, sorry, to anywhere in the world right now for a party, where would you take them to?
Yo, that's a good question.
Yeah,
that's a broad question. I don't know.
But like, literally, you're at the airport right now. You don't have time to sort of like idealize it. You're just literally like, there's five flights going, and everyone's got their bags, and you've just got to run. You know.
Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's loads of artists who over there who are also, you know, they don't come to Europe as much because it's insanely expensive to bring them over. Flight shares and things like that don't always work with all the different promoters, you know, in Europe. People don't have cash to sustain that lifestyle. So I guess maybe like going over there and sharing everything that they also provided on the scene, like all the Baile Funk influences and all this like really like fun, uplifting scenes and music and things like that. The energy over there seems to be really on point, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe we would go there.
I think quite a few people that I know have kind of come back from Brazil quite recently, actually, or have had like little musical journeys over there. So I don't know what's happening, whether it's just in the collective psyche at the moment or something.
Maybe.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And I think that's a good call as well, isn't it? Because that's like using the most of having a free journey as well, isn't it? Then going, yeah, I'll go to like Leipzig.
We were there with Fembase Mafia a couple of weeks ago at Institute.
No slacking off Leipzig, I didn't mean that, but no, you know, just in terms of getting the most for your miles, you know.
But the club there was really, really nice, actually. I highly recommend Institute for Zukunft.
Oh,
and it's like it looks like panorama bar, and then there's another room which looks like Ohm, and then like the bathroom, like the sinks look like the ones at About Blank, and I was like, oh, this just all looks like a big, you know, Berlin.
Yeah, it's like a multiverse.
A multiverse.
Yeah,
you can get lost and stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah,
highly recommend.
I will check that. I hope. I mean, I've been up for sort of doing like a kind of a Leipzig trip for a while, you know. So that's a good place. I wonder if I'll have the same sensation of feeling I've gone into like a multiverse of Berlin clubs mashed together.
I'm sure. Like
that.
Yeah.
That could be the next step, couldn't it? Just like actually, rather than mashing genres, mashing clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, once we figure out how to like sonically move buildings around different places. But anyway, I'm going on a bit of a sci-fi trip there. So when you started DJing, so you started DJing around the same time as the idea for Femme-Based Mafia sort of started to really kind of galvanize. And what for you, like, you know, you had this kind of love of bass music and the experience of clubbing and the experience of like, you know, growing up around music. But what was the thing that sort of tipped you into at that point going, I'm going to start DJing?
I mean, lockdown.
Just the lockdown thing.
The lockdown thing. Mm. And then found some secondhand CDJs on eBay Kleinanzeigen, and we took like a cab to get them, and it was like all very scary, and it was like around Admiralbrücke, and we didn't go out of the house for like 2 weeks. We're like, okay, we're gonna take the cab and pick up the CDJs, yeah.
So this was like in the really early stages of.
It was like April 2020,
right? Where it was like still all of the kind of things that we just didn't know, like, you know, you could get it if someone cycles past you,
right?
Or something like that.
Yeah, it was that phase.
Yeah, yeah.
And like we like, yeah, it was around Admiralbrücke, and next thing I know is like there's like crowds on that bridge. I'm like, what? This is a scam. But then we picked up the gear, and then I started practicing, just really had a drive, like an angry drive. At the time I was living in a flat share. My flatmate was DJing at home and inviting his friends to DJ. And it was like many, like, you know, like dudes, like they would all arrive with their record bag and like ready to rock the living room. And it was like only dudes.
Yeah. Like new record bag kind of things.
Yeah.
Very, very sort of shiny. Yeah.
Like you are a record bag, like, you know, branded and stuff. And
totally.
Like, I can do it too.
Basic channel logo on it.
Yeah. Something like that, you know, like kind of same aesthetic anyhow.
I'm only jealous because I can't afford one myself, but
yeah. Yeah, maybe that's why I started DJing.
To get the swag.
Of jealousy. Get the swag. But yeah, no, it was just really frustrating to like sit on the couch and like watch all of them take turns and back to back and have fun and understand what they're doing. And I was like, oh, I really want to do it too, but it feels so uncomfortable to like try and ask for help to like a group of, you know, like people you don't identify with. It's just like the dynamics in teaching are also really different. It's like, oh, you're not as shit as I thought you'd be. And you're like, oh, thanks. You know, like those kind of comments really put you off, like throw you off right away. So I feel that was the starting point, you know, where it was like, okay, I got to do something. I can't be the only one who's struggling to find, you know, a group with whom I can practice and learn, where I feel safe and just, you know, can master the craft.
Yeah. So that the lockdown gave you the space and time to figure out for yourself without the kind of external pressure as well. It's really interesting what you were saying about, like, you know, the kind of the comments as well and stuff like that. Because another thing I think a lot of femme artists that produce as well get is the kind of comment about, like, you know, who produces your stuff for you or stuff like that, or, you know, or the CDJ argument as well, you know, like if you're playing with CDJs, it's not, you're not the same as if you play with vinyl, you know, which, you know, which is interesting.
No, you're just objectified differently.
Did you feel like you knew the sound that you wanted?
Not really. I mean, I guess I started with loads of like electro and breaks, and then what we would call booty bass. Just like everything that emanates from faster sounds like footwork and juke and things like that. So derived from, I would say, ghetto house, I think, with all the lyrics and the faster like beats.
Do you think that the lockdown as well, because clubs were shut for a while, did it sort of, do you feel it opened up a space to maybe push ideas that weren't traditionally Berlin sounding, you know, because there wasn't an opportunity to hear that in a club, you know?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Although I must say, before the lockdown happened, there was still a few gigs where it's like, okay, the like sound is shifting, they're throwing in like tracks that have nothing to do with like traditional techno, and things would take interesting turns sometimes. So there was a bit of a change, but I would say definitely during, you know, when we were all like bored at home, people went out of their comfort zone, and it was time to, you know, just experiment and see if you like it first. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the, you know, I mean, it's strange to talk about like the pandemic and lockdown in a positive way, but like, I definitely feel like I took away certain elements of that space that I feel very grateful for what happened out of that space, not to, you know, look at what happened in the wider picture or to people individually. But I think a lot of people did, you know, take that space and sort of use it as a way to transform something, you know, or to hone in on a craft or an art or something like that, you know. What was your first gig?
I think it was like it was in a illegal rave in Wühlheide.
Right, was this one of the plague raves?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Again, this already seems like such a kind of nostalgic era, doesn't it? It's like, right? This is only a couple of years ago, but it's like, it feels like we're sort of, it's like a partly like deep nostalgia, part from a long time ago, partly like a weird long remembered dream as well, is what actually happened, you know.
Yeah, it's really weird to think back, because it was like in the middle of a forest and we had to like really like be quiet, you know, when getting there to not get spotted. And then they would put like, you know, beer crates, and on top of that controller like linked to like a really shit PA, and we would just like do it, you know. And like, I wasn't like that young or something. Like, it's not, you know, not, we weren't teenagers anymore. Like,
yeah. Did you feel a bit like you're being naughty, like a teenager?
Yeah.
Was that the good thrill. Thing? Was that a buzz?
Yeah, I think it was a buzz. Yeah. The adrenaline of being caught, you know.
God, yeah.
But yeah. And then after that, I think the first official one was at Error Festival, which was taking place at Sage Beach.
Oh yeah, along the Spree.
They did like we did like a Fanbase Mafia takeover, so everyone from the crew got a slot and played, and it was kind of funny because we took over from who was it? Not Regis, like Regal, which is like kind of famous techno DJ, and we completely changed the sound afterwards. Like, okay, this is gonna be experimental, but it worked out, and the crowds worked, and it was fine. It went fine. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. And do you, when did you sort of feel like, this is like an almost like every weekend thing now?
If I do feel like that?
No. You sort of, when you sort of saying you DJ like almost every weekend now, when did it kind of become that point where it was like this? Has it been for a couple of years now, do you think, or no?
No,
so it's quite recent.
It's quite recent. Yeah. But it's kind of like, been more regular, as in maybe since a year or something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess since last year it's been more steady, and before that it was kind of like the start of the end of, you know, that era.
And I wanted to ask you as well, because you've DJed, how many times have you DJed Hoa Radio?
A few times. Yeah. Like three, four times. I don't know. I did a few back-to-backs as well. So if we count it.
Because I'm always sort of quite fascinated, because already it's got such a mythology about the booth, you know, like it's just in terms that booth is like, become just this screen that, you know, you go on your social medias or something, and you see these yellow tiles. And
it's like the DJ check, you know. It's like the upcoming DJ starter pack. Like, you kind of need like that green tile on your Instagram to show that, you know, you're there.
What's the other one? I think the other really famous one that everyone has to is the just finished playing Burgine shot where,
right?
You know,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like daylight outside and it's sort of like still, you know, overwhelmed, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Still buzzing.
Yeah. The energy was wild. Which I know I would do if I'd done that. I'd do exactly the same thing.
I would definitely do it.
Yeah, totally.
Wait for it, Paul.
But I wanted to know what's on the other side, because I've never been into the Hua booth. Like, and so I have this kind of fantasy idea that there might be something, like it's in a submarine, you know, like what you don't see, I don't see like outside, you know, I just see, you just see the photo. Mm-hmm. What are you actually looking at? You know, what is...
Yo, it's actually like a gruesome building. Like,
oh.
Yeah, I think the whole building is being renovated and like most people have been like evicted from it, and they just have the space which is giving on Hasenheide on the street, and in front of it there's like a big like Baustelle, like a big like construction stuff, and you just look out of a window which is like in front of like a pile of trash basically,
right? It's like
it's really not that sophisticated or something, which also kind of like, you know, works for the Berlin
it's
scheme.
True, but also it kind of sounds to me a bit like, you know, when you have they reveal how a film's made and this was just all done on green screen, you know. Right. It's all giving me this kind of slightly kind of, oh, it's just a Berlin outbau rubble.
But the booth itself is very comfortable and really, really nice sound, like it's been insulated, so
that's amazing. And what do you feel, just kind of rounding it up, what do you feel really excited about now, you know, like in terms of maybe it could be something you've got coming up, or it could be just like a sort of a feeling that you felt like the last sort of few times you've played, you know, or like a sort of maybe like any changes in how people are, or...
Yeah, I guess, I mean, things are expanding, like music taste is ever, like forever evolving, but now I'm getting to a really interesting like place, like personally, but then excited about growing Fanbase Mafia. We might start a chapter in Barcelona now, which is also really exciting. We're also starting a production mentoring program this year together with Ableton, so it will be a 3-month express program for people to learn how to produce tracks. And I think that's also on my personal agenda, so yeah, I guess that would be like the next, you know, exciting steps, aside from doing showcases in other cities and things like that. So yeah,
that's amazing. So more and more people are getting the opportunity to go through the program now.
Yes. I mean, especially with the production one, there would be much more space for people because it would be online and you don't need to like mind, you know, like every single person in the program to feel, you know, that they're up to date and that they, you know, you don't need to provide like thorough support to people who learn something online. That's why also... it makes the actual DJing program much more like intimate and personal, and makes like really strong bonds because people like, you know, hang out together. And it's an in-person
thing.
You have
that hub thing. Yeah.
It's kind of that. But so technically, with the production one, more and more people will be able to access this and support groups as well. So that's really good.
Yeah. Lilia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Danger Mammy, head honcho of Fanbase Mafia with me, Paul Hanford. Lost and Sound, live at the Selina Hotel. Is it a hotel? It is a hotel.
Okay, so that was me, Paul Hanford, chatting with Danger Mammy, DJ, founder, head mentor of Fanbase Mafia. And we had that conversation a little over a month ago in the Selina Hotel in Mitte in Berlin. Thank you so much, Danger Mammy, for coming and chatting with me and being brave and being on a stage with me. It was kind of a little bit, it was a different sort of feeling talking on a stage from like the usual kind of private enclosure of how we usually do the chat. And thank you so much to Daniel and Josh at Podfest Berlin for inviting us to do that. Audio Technica is the sponsor of Lost and Sound, and I'm very, very happy about that. Audio-Technica are a global but still family-run company that make headphones, turntables, cartridges, microphones, studio-quality yet affordable products, because they believe that high-quality audio should be accessible to all. But whatever way you like to listen, head on over to audiotechnica.com to check out all of their range of stuff. My book, Coming to Berlin, is available in all good bookshops and via the Velocity Press website. And special thanks to ESO for doing the theme music that you hear at the beginning and at the end of every episode. Right, it's mid-afternoon in Athens. I'm going to go and get a cappuccino, have a bit of a wander around, stroke some cats. And I hope you have a fucking amazing afternoon. Chat to you soon.